Welcome to Get the Fork Out. Today we have Darren Goodwin, good friend of mine. I've known him like 10 years. We're going to have a couple beers, talk some shit, go on about the program that he's in. He's in one of the top programs in the industry, hands down. Like, there's, if you pay attention to who's got money in the world, he works for one of the richest families in the world, no doubt. And yeah, great dude. Talented chef. Everyone says this phrase like, oh, one of the best chefs in the industry. Nah, he's definitely one of the best chefs in the industry. Nice guy. Good to talk to him. Have a couple beers, talk some shit, and just go over his history, like how he became a chef and where he is now and with his art and with his photography. And awesome. Great chat. Hope you guys like it.
All right. Darren Goodwin, welcome to Get the Fork Out. Little backstory: Darren and I met in a club in Copenhagen. We had both gotten invited to this like chef's dinner it was number one restaurant at the time called Noma. Awesome dinner, awesome times, and we both became friends there and met a ton of other good people at the same time. It was such a good, crazy one of those yachting experiences. What do you think? Was that like 8 years ago? 9 years ago?
I reckon 9 years ago. 9 years ago. It was a fantastic weekend, eh?
Oh, dinner, man,
at Noma, that's so good. Get to meet some of the chefs in the industry, get drunk with the chefs in the industry, get to know them properly. It was fantastic.
Yeah, it was really good.
It was a good bonding session for a few chefs.
A lot of shit talking, like a lot of shit talking, which I appreciated because I enjoy
Absolutely.
That. And so do you. it was just like, it was one of those things too. Like they tried to recreate it, a couple of years later, and you know, the food wasn't as good, the service wasn't as good, the banter and the chefs was still fantastic. But yeah, it was just so good. Yeah, it was fun.
Epic time.
Oh, so good, and it's just like
A cool city, so Copenhagen, really cool.
Yeah, Copenhagen blew me away. I was really impressed. Really impressed. Yeah. It was fun to watch a lot of chefs run amok at the same time and in different ways. You know, like McCartney didn't come back for like 2 days. Like, just all these random shit happened. It was awesome. Bunch of hooligans.
It was epic.
Let's talk.
We can do another one of those.
Oh man, I would love that. I would love that. Oh, it was so good. It was so fun. And like most of those people, like I remember exactly who was at that dinner. It was epic. Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about yourself. When did you start cooking? When did you get like kind of bug? When did you realize as some point in your adolescence, you're like, I just want to be a chef? Or was there a career before that?
I was a teenager, so I didn't have the whole romantic family of chefs that brought me up, you know, that some people have, which is lovely. But for me, I actually left school and went to art college for 2 years.
Awesome.
I got a part-time job in a kitchen while I was at college. By the time I finished college, I didn't want to do art anymore. I wanted to be a chef. I had a massive, massive hunger for being a chef and just buying books, reading them, watching TV. Yeah, I went back to catering college after that. But after 3 months, I'd read all the 2 years worth of all the coursework. I've been through it all. And I was 2 years older than everyone else in the class. So I left. I left after 3 months. I've since got my qualification through one of the restaurants, through their own private school. But yeah, I was just hungry. I just wanted to cook, just wanted to get in the restaurants. And then
the class wasn't moving fast enough for you?
It stopped at 7, really. It wasn't a well-known college for catering, I guess. It wasn't the cordon bleu, you know. It was mediocre. So by the time I'd read all the coursework, everyone else was still on page one.
Yeah.
So I left and got a job in a restaurant.
I'm checking my phone just because, like, yeah, it's really just a shoddy connection. So then there was like an apprenticeship program through the restaurant. It was a school affiliated with a restaurant. Which restaurant was it?
It was Paul Heathcote's restaurant in Preston. He had two restaurants. He had a brasserie and he had a 2-star restaurant, and he had his own school of excellence in Manchester. So they did apprenticeships. I worked at the brasserie first, and then did a bit of time at the 2-star. But before I left there, they said, we need to get you your qualifications. So I got quite lucky, really. The lecturers came to the restaurant. And after being there a year, I'd been around the fish, the meat, the veg, the desserts, the starters. So they came and just watched me work in the restaurant, asked me questions, and basically said, you seem to know what you're doing. They gave me all the coursework. I had to do 2 years worth of coursework in my split shift. Took me a few weeks of just doing all the coursework. And they marked it all off and came and did practical assessments. So not your usual way of being educated, I think, but it was kind of good because it was learning on the fly in the restaurant rather than reading it all from a textbook. So it was awesome, really.
Yeah, I think when I
it was like a long time ago.
Yeah, I mean, but I did a similar thing where I went to culinary school. I got a scholarship to go to culinary school, but in retrospect, I shouldn't have. I should have done an apprenticeship. I think I would have gotten ahead a lot farther, a lot faster with that practical experience rather than the cookbook stuff. I don't, and this is just my opinion, but I don't think it translates well. Like learning from a book on how to cook, like you can't teach someone out of a book how to make a hollandaise. You got to do it every day.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then I think I remember that restaurant. I had to do it twice a day, lunch and dinner for 3 months, you know.
Yeah.
15 eggs worth of hollandaise. So you learn it. You really You don't just do it once in a classroom. You really learn.
Yeah.
And you've got to get quick at it because you're getting shot. Yes, you don't.
Yeah. how to store it as well. Like, how is it going to last all service? But I think that's what I would do. Like, when resumes cross my desk of, like, sous chefs to hire, it's like, I would go for apprenticeship, definitely, or just, like, 2 years in a 1-star or 2 years at a just a really nice restaurant over a 2-year culinary degree, which you don't know what you're going to get or what you're going to get, really.
Yeah, definitely. It's nice to have both, I think. But yeah, apprenticeships.
Yeah.
Apprenticeships are great.
How many years have you been yachting for? Wow, there's a delay, man. Well, I can edit this out, but fuck. It's like, because there's a delay that we keep, like, chopping on each other, and then, like, you freeze, I freeze. Fuck.
Yeah, man. It's a good job you're a pro at editing.
Well, yeah, but I'm talking to the people I'm staying with who are amazing people, but, yeah, they're going to call the Wi-Fi is real bad. That's why I'm like, I'm using cellular data to do this, and it's like, oh, it's a pain in the ass. It's working fine now, but I can always shop the stuff out. That's why I slap my leg. It's like, if I see a spike, I know I got to do something. But, yeah, 15 years, you said you've been in yachting for, right?
15 years, yeah. I think I was in restaurants from 18 to 25. And then I left restaurants to come and do yachting for 1 year. I had a friend out here who was working as a deckhand and kept saying, come out, you'll like it. So I came to Gulf Juan to, I met his chef and his captain, tore the boat weekend in Gulf Juan and went back to London and resigned. But 6 months, 6 months notice at the restaurant and said I'd be back in a year. They said, yeah, your job's waiting for you. But I didn't turn back, I guess.
Which restaurant was that?
That was Ramsay's one in London.
How was that? Tell us about that experience.
Well, yeah, that was hectic, man. That was hectic. That was 18-hour days, 5 days a week. Pressure all day long. You know, there's no radio, there's no music. You know, there's no real talking unless it's about.
That's crazy. Was Gordon there at all? Oh, it's frozen. I can edit this out if you can hear me.
Oh. He was in regularly 4 or 5 times a week. Not prepping, but he'd come in for service in the evening. and and overseas. But around after around 6 months, this was back in 2003. So they started doing I think the F word and kitchen nightmares back then. So we, you know, start seeing less and less of him once a week, once a fortnight. I'd say by the time I left, he'd come in once a fortnight probably just to check everything is still going okay.
How many stars did you guys have?
That was his 3 stars, a flagship one. It was his first restaurant.
And what was the name of that? You probably said it earlier.
I remember that.
Cut out.
It was just called Restaurant Gordon Ramsay.
Restaurant Gordon, okay.
It's where Ronnie opened after he left the aubergine.
Okay, all right.
But yeah, right. Amazing, mate. Incredible food. And so it's like a well-oiled machine when just, like if you're on the veg section, you came in at 6:30, at 7 you had to be blanching this, and 7:30 doing that, 8 o'clock braising veg. And if you're on the sauce, you had to have your red wine sauce on by 7:15 and your Madeira sauce on by 7:45. And if you fall behind, there's someone's on your back, you know? So you learn to watch the clock and how long everything takes and be real.
That's amazing.
It was good. Definitely learn a lot. It's definitely helped me on the ops as well, I think, just to be real, real, real organized. Just to always be aware of what time of the day it is.
Yeah.
I mean, how long everything takes.
It's funny when you've done a stint at work and you go on rotation or whatever, or you just finished off a summer season and you realize like how much of a slave to the clock that we are, like how much it impacts our lives every day. And then you'll be behind someone in traffic or someone will be moving slow in a line at the grocery store and just like, you're not a slave to the clock. You don't even care. Like it doesn't matter. And I'm almost jealous, but mostly I'm annoyed. Mostly I'm annoyed.
Oh yeah.
It's the same on the yachts as well. It's like you're just watching the clock all day. But it's that time management skill is a valuable one.
Well, you've got free meal.
Yep.
Sorry.
No, there's a delay. This connection is brutal. It's five meals a day. Sometimes like on Arians we do morning tea no matter what for crew as well. So when there's guests on, in essence there's 6 meals. But we got a system and it's a great crew, so you don't mind doing it when the crew's awesome. But it's a lot when there's guests on. I think that's what people don't realize. Like it's so funny when you talk to people that aren't in the industry, not even yachting, but just the cooking, and their idea of what our day is like is vastly out of whack. Nowhere near. It's just funny. It's nonstop.
Oh, completely. Completely. And I think we know very well that if we don't get what we need to do done on time, someone's not getting fed, whether it's crew or guest. I've been busy today. I'll finish this tomorrow.
There's no, we're a little bit, no hiding.
We're a weird bunch, chefs, and we love it. We love the pressure.
We love the pressure, but for me personally, like I love where the pressure has taken me in terms of what I've had to learn, the tricks I've needed to find, the shortcuts I've needed to be able to have. Like you have to have a repertoire of shortcuts to get yourself out of the shit. And then hopefully these shortcuts don't compromise the integrity of whatever you're trying to make, but you need to have them. And I think yacht chefs are just, you're always digging yourself out of a hole because there's so many variables all the time. It's not even your fault that you're in a hole most of the time. You're just buried because the weather is bad or something didn't show up, or there's 10 more people for dinner and you only have an hour to finish off the prep you already started. It's endless, as you know.
It is. You basically spend the day digging your way out of a hole. You go to sleep and wake up and you're back in it again.
It's very true. Yeah. How good is that moment when you're done work and you have like, you're just like that. If you have guests on, you got about like a half hour to an hour of, all right, relax. And then, you fall asleep and you wake up and you're right back in it for 16, 18 hours a day.
Yeah. It's mad, isn't it?
That
alarm goes, you're in and out of that shower that fast, brushing your teeth in the shower and back on full speed in the kitchen.
That's true. What do you think? I mean, so you've been doing it like we talked about 15 years, by now. Do you have a, and leaving your present boat out of it, which we can't talk about, right? Like, I think we should announce that we're not dodging the subject. We just can't talk about the boat that you're on because of NDAs that we all need to sign. But this particular program is quite secretive.
Yeah, the owner of the boat likes his privacy a lot, so we have to respect that, you know.
Oh, definitely.
I've had it before on another boat. The boat's a big boat. It's well over 100 meters, you know, and these guys want their privacy respected, so we do that, which is fine. It's fine, you know.
Yeah, and if I ever ask anything and it's going to tread on those rules, then just don't answer. Just be like, nah, I can't answer that. But that's why I pose a question like this. Like, of all the boats besides your present one, which one is your, do you have a favorite, like charter boat or cruising area, or you just have like great crew members, or do you have one?
I'd say my first boat. And I've done quite a few since then, charter boats, private boats, big boats, small boats. But the first boat I joined was a busy charter boat, Slipstream. And I was on there 18 months. We did the entire Med, every French port up and down the Italian coast, Corsica, Sardinia. We went around and did the Greek islands, did Turkey until October. Then we did a season in the Maldives, did a charter in Egypt on the way there, did a charter in Israel in Elat on the way back. So, I learned to scuba dive in that first year. And, you know, had an amazing crew, just 10 crew. We just had such a laugh.
The human body is water.
Excuse me. Sorry. Home weapon.
What is that?
Yeah, so I just had so much fun and saw so many countries in one year.
Yeah.
So many ports. And after being cooped up in restaurant kitchens and basements in London for so long, I just absolutely buzzed off it. Absolutely buzzed off it. Private islands in the Maldives, barbecues, all this kind of thing that a year earlier, I wouldn't imagine you'd be on this little sandbar setting up a barbecue for someone. It's incredible.
Yeah.
That's why I never went back to the restaurant.
Yeah, I don't see myself going back either. I can't. There's no way. It's just too fun. It's too interesting. It's too, you look out these windows and it's different every day. It changes constantly. And the idea of grinding out 365 days of the same schlep to work back and forth, whether it was my restaurant or not, not into it, not into it at all. But that run you did was pretty epic. Like, I've gone on some big runs too, but like to start in France and then work your way all the way up the northern coast of the Med and then around the boot, back up the other side of the boot, and then to keep going to Greek and Turkey. Yeah, I've done that. But then to go continue on to Egypt and then come back and do Israel. I've never done either of those places. Epic. That's a massive run. That's the Med.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we did Athens. So, yeah, did the Corinth Canal and the Suez Canal in my first year. Just every week. They had the whole charter season set out to literally go across Europe from one side to the other and then across the Maldives. It was just awesome. Had a massive fever for it after that.
Yeah, that's
and
a good
obviously, I mean, for a first the freedom.
Boat, incredible.
With all the food you want on charter. And obviously, you suddenly awesome. Have this freedom to talk to charter guests and cook whatever you want for them, build these relationships with the crew and the guests, and just great. Going out to the dinner table every night to introduce food. Just, yeah, it's just a massive buzz.
As opposed to, you know, 3 Michelin star, which is a buzz as well, but it's different. Now it's personal. Now you're presenting your own food and you're able to show who you are and speak to people through what you want to give them for food, like within their preferences. It's awesome. It's a big difference.
Yeah. It's a huge difference. It's a different buzz. And I honestly, I do miss the rush of service in a big restaurant like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's something else. The adrenaline, the pumps. I think for the last 14 months I was there, I cooked every piece of meat and fish. That's for 5 or 6 hours. Yeah. I think the last 14 months there, I cooked every piece of meat and fish. made every sauce that left.
That's awesome.
Biggest freestyle Michigan restaurant in London. So it's a great feeling.
Well done.
Yeah. It's a great feeling. But I left there looking like a crackhead, I think. I was just so battered, beaten up, and tired.
It's a lifestyle for sure, and it's not a healthy one. Like I've done stages in London, and it's just different. In the States, we do it, or at least the places I worked at, and this is before the States had Michelin stars. One of them for sure would have been a 1 or 2 star. Lydia Shire's place, Biba in Boston, it was awesome. But we did it by the hour, so it was not that kind of London salary scheme where you guys are just pummeled. Like so long story short. Pay by the hour, so as soon as our station's wrapped up, we're done, and then someone cheaper comes in and cleans the whole kitchen. Right? Then I go years later, I'm in yachting and I'm doing stages, and one of them happened to be in London. And the whole crew, all of us are there at 7 a.m. same salary, cook all day through lunch, couple hour break after lunch, and then back, and you're done at 1 a.m. It's hectic. It is a brutal lifestyle.
It is brutal. It is brutal. I think it's changed a lot now, to be honest. They've had to kind of adapt to the more modern way of this kind of more shift work as well. I did a stage at the Flat Duck, and the guys in the restaurant that did the split shift, they did 4 days a week only, and I had 3 days off. And the guys in the prep kitchens did 5 days, but they kind of did 8 till 5, and they rotated and had weekends off. So they kind of rotated around who was doing this, and if you were doing the long days, you did a day less. Trying. It's a hard industry. These restaurants have got to make money, and the amount of staff they need and the ingredients versus the price people will pay for the food, it's an incredibly hard balance.
I feel like I'm sure you've had these conversations with people too, where people have never worked in a restaurant industry, and there's a lot of people that haven't, and they shouldn't automatically know this shit. No one makes millions of dollars with a restaurant, not on the food. They see these high ticket, whether it's 100 euros to 600 euros for a tasting menu, let's say. Those margins are so slim. Like you said, the ingredients that need to be bought, the ingredients that are expected on a menu that expensive, truffle, foie gras, caviar, all these things cost a lot of money. Things flown in from Easter Island, whatever. And then the margins are slim. And we're seeing it with COVID. We're seeing, like, did you see that, like, the biggest group of Ferran and Albert Adria are bankrupt now? Like, so basically the best chefs in the world, their group is bankrupt now. So it's these people aren't amassing a fortune doing this stuff. Like, this stuff is really hard and expensive to make. So if you pay 500 euros a head, it's not like it costs them 50 euros and they're taking the rest. It probably costs them 475 and they're making 25 on your meal, some shit like that.
Yeah, it's insane, isn't it? It's quite sad, really, that talented and hardworking and creative chefs struggle and lose their business like the Adria brothers. It's insane. When people don't realize either that if you want to make money, you make pizzas and burgers.
Exactly, and French fries. Exactly. The margins on that shit is huge. Like it's like you spend 10 cents and you make a dollar. It's it's an interesting time though. Like I told you earlier about, we didn't really talk about, like I got diagnosed with COVID on not this Monday, but the Monday before. So it puts me at like 11 days. That's why I'm like wheezing now a little bit and breathing heavy. But, and it was just a couple days of very mild flu. And then each morning I woke up and I was a little bit better. So, it's really interesting to get sick with it, test positive, and then get tested again, still testing positive, and then just watching the world go through this and how it's affected the restaurant industry and how it's affected the yachting industry, and it's still going, you know, and some of these vaccines are getting put on hold. I'm not getting a vaccine. Like, I think did you already get one? I forget. Oh, you did, yeah.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet, but we will be before the season starts, I think.
Yeah.
You must have been worried, though. Like you say, fortunately, thank God that you had mild symptoms and they cleared up quick, but If I was there's a lot of worry. Positive, I'd be really worried which way it was going to go.
Yeah, that's probably the worst of it, is that you're worrying about how bad is it, which one did I get, you know? And then an interesting thing, too, is to be in California where they're completely locked down and the governor Newsom is under fire left and right for how draconian his measures have been for lockdown. And then I just came from Georgia for a shift guard and just came from Fort Lauderdale when I got off my rotation. There's no measures whatsoever. Like, there's none. And the numbers are comparable. So I don't know. It's hard to take this seriously when you get it and it was nothing. And the whole world is on lockdown. Economies are crumbling. People like the Adrio brothers are bankrupt. And that being said, I spoke to someone today that works at the retirement home my dad works at, and they were fortunate, but other retirement homes in the area were just basically throwing just bodies. Just everyone was dying. So it's a weird one, man. It's when you get it and it's nothing, it changes your perspective, and probably not in a healthy way, because I take it less seriously now. And I shouldn't.
Yeah.
Working on that.
Yeah. Well, you don't know, do you?
I don't know, man. I don't know
if the lockdowns were too extreme or if they were right. And if it didn't lock down, it'd be horrendous. We don't know, do we? We're just at the whim. And yeah. Unfortunately, the hospitality industry, our lovely industry, has taken an absolute beating.
It showed how fragile it is. It was one of the first things to go. You know, one of the first things to shut down, one of the first things to not be able to pay its employee. And that goes back to what we were saying about these cost margins. Like, so another reason I don't want a restaurant, it's like you need five to make a decent living, probably five to make like a good, you can't just do it on one. It's too hard. There's not enough money in it. So it's just an interesting time. I brought that up. I got COVID because it brings up so many conversations about what we were already talking about in terms of the restaurant industry and being kind of fragile and then being in yachting. And at some point, whether I want to take the vaccine or not, and the same for you, is we're going to be made to take the vaccine if we want to work for a program, company, whatever you want to call it. And those will be interesting times too. Yeah. I'm not really looking forward to that because it's hard to want to get vaccinated when you get lucky and you get an easy. So now I'm kind of vaccinated for 3 months because I've been exposed, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you've already got the antibodies now.
Yeah.
But it just needs to end, man. I can't believe it's still going on.
Yeah.
It felt like it was about 3 or 4 weeks or something when it started, and we're still here, still messing around. I've had more rapid tests than I can mention. Every 5 days.
It's true.
I think I've got a hole in my brain. Man. There's hole in my brain. It shouldn't be there.
Well, I don't know about what are your experiences with it? I've felt like they've gotten a lot easier. Like in the beginning, they would be going like here with the swab, you know, and now there's like 10 seconds around just the inside of your nostrils. It's so much easier. It's so much easier.
Last summer, we were doing the PCR tests, the ones you got to send off and wait for the result. And I got used to those quite quickly. But the recent periods in the shipyard, we had access to the rapid flow tests, the instant ones. And they go deeper.
And really?
Every single one was like a reminder, like, really? You have to go in that far, really?
Oh, it doesn't tickle. Oh. And you come across some people that are just social isolated the whole time, and they haven't even gotten a test. I'm like, oh, what are you? That's nice. It's nice you don't get tested. It's really, it's enjoyable.
Yeah.
It's What So, what do you You went to art school for a couple of years, and that shows when you. For those that don't know, Darren posts his pics. He does a lot of color pencil drawings and charcoal drawings, and probably other things that I'm going to misquote on here. But it's, you can tell that you've used your lockdown to get back into art and kind of get after something that you wanted to go to school for in the first place. It's really cool to see.
It's weird. It's gone full circle. So I finished art college and I had places at university to do fine art and things and didn't go, became a chef and didn't draw again until the first lockdown last year. 21 years without drawing anything. And now it's my new favourite hobby. I can't get enough of it again. So it's come back again. So, but I always thought, like, I remember saying to someone back when they said, why are you going to be a chef, not be an artist? I said, well, if I be an artist, maybe I'll make money, good money when I'm dead. Whereas if I'm a chef, I'm going to make money right
You'll
now.
You'll make shit money when you're alive.
But I don't know. It's a big thing now. I think a lot of people got into it. And I've been really impressed with all the... I've been watching a lot of YouTube videos on drawing techniques. And the internet and YouTube wasn't around when I was at college. I think I've learned more off YouTube this year than I did at college, I think. It's just so much access to whatever you want to, what you want to learn, yeah. Not what they want to teach you as well. It's been great. It's been great.
It's the same for me with video editing. But do you watch any videos on Bob Ross? Do you know who that is?
I've heard the name. He's Bob Ross.
Oh, I'll get you a note, man. He's awesome. So he was on PBS when I was a kid, and he would like, is this really interesting guy. I think he flew helicopters in Vietnam. He's got this kind of like a furry afro haircut. He's super calm, and he just paints these pictures in a half hour, 45 minute segment that are unreal. They're so cool. You'll love them. And so I think the reason you probably heard his name is because he's become like a cult icon 50 years after the fact, 40 years after the fact. And, he's so quick, man. He's got all these different brushes, and he's so good at like teaching you what he's doing. He's talking his way through it. He's great. You'll love him, man. I'm excited that you don't know. Now I get to show you like who this guy is. Awesome. He's awesome. Bob Ross. I want to get a t-shirt with this guy's head on it. So yeah. But like for me too, I don't know if it's a chef thing, but I mean, I've been cooking food for 30 years, and video editing and filming and photography too kind of hits those same spots that food does in my brain of creativity and kind of like a craft. Like maybe you're feeling the same with drawing, where it's about the techniques and the tricks and the shortcuts and like how it's just, I love it. And it's really fun to learn something new. And I'm kind of going through the same thing that you are with YouTube. It's incredible the amount of knowledge that is in that stupid little app, like that website. It's just a website, but it is amazing.
Yeah, it's insane. Yeah, photography is the one thing I kept on. I did photography at college as well, like processing black and white photos and whatnot, and I've kept with that, with the food photography and travel photography, like, and it is the same, and it's the same with the drawing. It's something that you've got to learn the techniques, but once you've learned them, you can be as creative as you want afterwards. Same with cooking. You learn the techniques, you get to go and be creative and do your own thing with it, put your own twist on it, do it your own way. It's great.
Yeah, I had kind of like everything that's kind of gone my way since those videos that I put out on Facebook, and what I've learned since then about it, I just enjoy it that much more. Like it's so fun to kind of do a shot list and think about what you want to get out of it, and then what you're going to shoot, what could be funny, and then you get half the shit you wanted or all of it, and then you get to edit it and you can put your own kind of spank on it and have fun with transitions and voiceovers and sound effects. I love it, man. It's really fun. That's really fun.
No, you've done really, really well with it as well. I remember watching the olive oil gasoline videos on your road trips on the bike, and we've gone to the quarantine kitchen videos, which were just amazing. And then this is my first time sitting in front of a camera to be recorded to go on the internet in my life.
Yeah, you're doing real well.
Very new.
It's
yeah, I've been very impressed with your the way you've gone ahead and done it all, mate. It's been fucking fantastic.
Well, I would encourage anyone to do it, like you included. Like, it feels like you're sticking your neck out there, but, and I guess you are, but no one's going to be anything but positive. And if they're not positive about it, then don't worry about it. Just try to do better next time. But I feel like what I've learned through all this is that, you know, consuming data from the internet,
is obviously interesting. We all enjoy it, whether it's watching Netflix or learning something on YouTube or taking a course. But creating content and putting it up there, even if it's shoddy, you're still there's so you get so much more in return from it. And I can't encourage people enough to just try it. Just go for it. Like, think of your worst nightmare happening and then realize that's probably not going to happen. And then if it did happen, you'd be like, oh, all right, well, move on and get over it. It's just even when I post, I'm going to post this, I'm still going to get anxiety posting it, being like, oh, you know, like it doesn't come without its own kind of fears and anxiety. It's almost like, you know, when you put a plate out, nah, it's a shit analogy. I don't know where I'm going with this, but I would encourage just take a risk. It's totally worth it. You get 10 times more.
That's where the excitement is as well, isn't it, with the anxiety?
Yeah.
I think that's where the excitement probably with the anxiety of putting yourself out of your comfort zone and then it working well is where the satisfaction comes from. It's a massive thing now, isn't it? Content, everyone in the world now gets to create content, and you put your mark out there for the world forever now. It's going to be on the internet forever, you know. If you're leaving a little bit of something that someone might watch in 10 years, 15 years. Pretty cool.
Agreed.
I should get involved.
Well, I hope you do, man. I'd love to do something with you. We cook something together and film it and edit it and just talk shit, have fun. It's just, it's an amazing thing to do, and it's, the reason that I like doing it is because it feels somewhat helpful, you know, especially with the quarantine kitchen videos, is that I felt like I was helping people that were, you know, cooking for teaching techniques and whatnot for the first time. But what I realized too is that if you gain any traction with this stuff, especially as a yacht chef, but could be a parallel to any other field of work, is that you become a beacon for the new people, the people that aren't in the industry yet that want to get in. And I didn't know that was going to happen. And so I find myself realizing that and being like, okay, yeah. All right. So there's a whole nother podcast that I haven't posted yet by the time this comes out, that'll get posted about how to become a yacht chef, like how to get in the industry. I never would have done that 2 years ago. I wouldn't have had the time. I wouldn't have had the patience. But now it's like, it feels kind of like that's how you can be helpful. Then that's how you be helpful. Then just do what you can and help people out. Side tangent.
You've had a lot of contact from people wanting to get in the industry.
Randoms. People that's I don't cool. know. People I'm not that's friends cool. with. And yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
It is. But I never would have thought that would have been a role that A would have came at me, and B, I would have been like, yeah, I'll do that. I just want to now. It's that time in probably both of our careers where we can help out the youngins, you know.
You got to live up to that name, Big Dog, anyway.
B-Dog. Oh, I can't get rid of that nickname. B-Dog. Oh, is that what it says on there? No, it says Brendan Day, too. Because it used to say on my the little thing here on Zoom, B-Dog, because I must have filled that in. Anyway, I got rid of it. I mean, we can't cook on yachts forever. Is there something besides art? Is there something that's going to that you want to transition to at some point?
I'm at a point now where I've decided I've got probably 5 to 10 years left. And during these years are going to be, I need to work towards something for the way out. And we spoke about it before as well. So I've started working on a website, and then, I want to start bringing out some recipes and products, hopefully some sauces, spice mixes, all these things, and use the money from the yachting and the time I've got to build something up that's there ready to step off the boat.
Yeah.
It's something I decided last year. It's time now to start planning that, making that exit plan. And after, you know, all those years in restaurants, all I wanted to do was open a restaurant, but the yachting industry definitely changed my outlook on that. It's a lifestyle choice to stay out here for the freedom and the travel. And like we said, you're busy when the guests are on, when they're off, you're cooking for the crew only, you've got your evenings and weekends off, and you get good holidays. I've decided, you know, life's important too. And now it's got the opportunity and the time to build something. stop spending it traveling and start spending it on the
got a balance it, I think.
But yeah,
that's the hard part.
But you have rotation, right?
Yeah. So I've got plenty of time on my hands now to start doing that. So I have been working on that in the background a little bit. It's mixed in with doing the drawing and other things. So it's a slow start.
Yeah, well, it's been a weird year.
So yeah,
it's been a very strange year.
It'd be great for us to collaborate on something there as well, and help you with your things and help me with mine.
No, happily. That's the thing. It's like
when we can finally get together again.
Yeah, I don't intend on doing anything on my own, even though I'm doing this. These sort of videos are on my own or collaboration with Rhea, but. Yeah, it's just that camaraderie, that kind of friendship with doing a project and like having ideas and being able to bounce them off each other. It's so valuable, and it's so much more fun to have like a teamwork kind of aspect to it.
We had that chat, didn't we? Right, no, I fully agree. Like, two heads are better than one.
Yeah,
you've got the extra imagination, the extra influence, the extra drive, the support when you need it. You know, it's what a team's for. You know.
Yeah.
So, agreed.
So if you end up leaving yachting one day, which I mean we all will, what do you think you'll miss the most? Like I have an answer in my mind, but I want to hear yours before I say mine. What do you think is the most special part and most unique part of yachting?
It's all very unique, isn't it? It's nice going away to work for 2 months and burying yourself in that work for 2 months, knowing. You know, afterwards, you're going away, you're going to go home for 2 months. You go in there, you've got 2 months. You've got your crewmates, your friends there. You've got freedom to cook without having to make money. So just to impress people. So you get to play around with food in an insane way. Just to impress people without having to worry about making the money. Traveling, different ports, dealing with the issues of provisioning and finding things. And you can go with it. And then walk. You're wash your hands off it and go home and chill. You know, someone else is taking over. And you can be free follow your other path.
Rotation is key for that. This is my first. Like I had rotation when I was on. Darren and I were working on the Moto Yacht Ecstasy at the same time. But had 4-2 rotation and that was cool. But this even rotation's insane. This is my first time with it, and yeah, the opportunity to. Spend lots of money is there, but to actually work on these side projects that I really enjoy, that they don't make me any money. They might not ever make me any money, but they're good fun. I think like what I miss most about yachting is the crew. That's what I've come to realize. Like as I move, change jobs to another boat. Like I'll usually work on a boat for like 4 years, and then in between those jobs, I'll freelance around. I'll take temp stuff. It's the crew. I think that's what I miss the most. Like I couldn't imagine like. Another line of work with like this group of people from all over the world. Like it's quite fantastic. I'll miss that a lot.
It is. Yeah. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. I've just come back from 2 months of work with 70 crew. I don't know how many, 15 nationalities probably.
Yeah.
I love them all. They're amazing. We have such a good time together. I've got a few chefs in the kitchen with me, so we have an amazing time. And you've got all these other personalities and characters. I just laugh every day, man. We just have a good time. Finish work, you know, hang out with the guys. You're laughing and joking. It's just, So I think I'd miss the, you know, when you know you're going back to work as well. When you get on that, I quite like it. You know, you get the flight, you're going back to work. You're going to see all these people you haven't seen for a few weeks, and you know you're going to have a good time. Man. It's a great feeling.
Yeah, I agree. It feels healthy as well. Like I feel like it could be sustainable, keep us probably both in the industry for longer rather than doing that 10 months on a boat, you know, with a month break here and a month break there. It's just not the same. And it's, I don't know, it's such a weird thing we do. Like we're 40-something-year-old men that sleep in like bunk beds, you know, like or potentially, and it's cramped quarters, and we just have this kind of like weird lifestyle, but it only works because it's dynamic, it's problem solving, it's insanely fun, and
it is a lifestyle. And I think that's what the world is getting introduced to with like shows like Below Decks, where they're getting a glimpse of kind of what it is, even though that's a bit bush league compared to the boats you and I work on. But they kind of see the fun in it, you know. Guests come, you put on a show, relax, hopefully get a day off and do it again somewhere else.
Yeah. You do have to be of a certain mind, I think. You've got to be happy to be away from home, and you've got to like the travel and the adventure a little bit. I've had many people over the years say, "Oh, you know, I wish I had your job and your lifestyle." Because you got the whole thing with Facebook as well. You post the beautiful pictures of where you are and all this stuff and the fun you're having. People see that. And I've said to a few people, would you be happy, you know, in a bunk bed for weeks on end at sea, maybe not stepping ashore, working 7 days a week when it's busy, not seeing your friends and family at home? And it's a second thought for a lot of people. Then you've got to want that. You've got to enjoy that, I think.
Yeah, I agree. We do a lot, and it's like I'm thinking back about when I first got into the industry, and when you first got in the industry, and those first initial steps of, you know, quitting your job, probably selling all your shit or moving your shit into storage unit or your parents' place, whatever, then committing to going to Antibes, Fort Lauderdale, Barcelona to look for work. These are all challenging hurdles for a lot of people. I think it keeps a lot of riffraff out of the industry, even though the industry is growing and we need more crew. There's not enough crew, you know, until COVID hit. I think those first initial steps, like you said, you don't see that in my Instagram posts or your Facebook posts. You don't see the kind of the challenges that it is just to get in the door.
No, not at all. I remember leaving London to go to Antibes to look for work with a small suitcase full of chef whites and pants, knives, all my favorite tools and little pastry molds. I think I had like two pairs of shorts and two pairs of t-shirts and some flip-flops hanging around waiting for a job to finally get a job. And they're like, "Well, we give you the uniform. We've got all those tools and utensils. You don't need any of that." But, to waste my first charter to buy some clothes. Yeah, I didn't know what I was going into, really. I'm going to be a prepared chef, put recipe books and cookbooks in the bag, and nothing personal. It's the opposite way around now. Everything's It's great.
It's interesting too. Like, I mean, 15 years for you, 20 years for me. Like those first steps to the type of person that would do that as a really young man or a young woman. I think a lot of people wouldn't. It's too much to leave home. It's too much to take that risk of selling the car and tucking your shit away and being like, "All right, I'm going to go do this thing." I think maybe it's a little more accessible now because of Below Deck. I think there's when your family thinks you're crazy and they're like, "What the fuck are you going to do?" That you can be like, "Well, here, there's Below Deck." There's kind of a little show about it. You can see that this industry does exist. But back in the day, it was a bit, it's no man's land. No one even understood. You're like, "Oh, you're going to go work at a cruise ship." I'm like, nah, it's different than a cruise ship, I promise. And then they launch into some cruise ship story. You're like, "I don't know why you're telling me this. I don't know why you're telling me a cruise ship story right now."
Yeah, I think my family already knew I was crazy. I'd already left three different cities to work in different restaurants on my own. I do remember actually when I was 18, when I first started cooking, 18, 19, that was when Ramsay's Boiling Point came up. Did you see that show?
No, I don't remember the earliest show I remember seeing was Kitchen Nightmares, the London one, the good one, or the UK one. That was awesome. Cause it was his tough love. He was still swearing and being an asshole, but it was in the right direction, you know, but Boiling Point, I don't remember. I'll take a look.
Boiling Point was, there's videos on YouTube. It was more fly on the wall, no script and no big camera setup, but. And he was trying to get his third star. Still only had two. And it's in, that's like the real Ramsay in his restaurant going off at people. And I remember my mum saying, "Oh God, you'd never work for someone like that, would you?" I was like, I wanna. By the time I got there, three or four years later, he was all over the television. So my mum was like, "Oh, I should work for Ramsay." Funny. changing.
That's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, I guess when I'd left to France, they were quite used to me just getting up and leaving with a suitcase.
Yeah. It's fascinating, though, just how people are wired differently. And some people never leave their hometown and they're happy and wildly successful, but some of us just need to go see some shit. You know, it's just, there's no right answer. It's just, I find it fascinating. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. Well, yeah, it's been a good chat, Darren. Like, I look forward to seeing you again, man. It's been too long, but I just wanted to have a nice interview with you.
It has, man.
Introduce you to, honestly, you're going to hate me saying this, but I do think you are one of the best chefs in the industry. Like, I've just seen your work as it's progressed over the years, and you know, the jobs you've gotten and been successful at. I'm just like, you're crushing it, man. It's been, I just kind of want to introduce people to you and have a couple beers while I'm in California and you're in France. Massive time difference, which has been a struggle, and we've finally got it to work. But yeah, man, stoked that you're my friend, and I'm super proud of you, man.
Thank you, mate. It means a lot. Really does mean a lot. Appreciate that. and you as well, mate. This has been awesome. You keep going with all this stuff, man. You're fucking flying. And your galley designs and all this, mate. You've got so much energy. It's ridiculous. Don't ever stop with it, man. And thank you for having me on here.
Yeah, man. No, absolutely. Let's do it again. Let's do a whole, let's talk about galley design. Let's talk about the things we've seen that we love and the things that we've seen that we hate. And well, just something like that. It'd be fun. We've seen so many different boats, like from small ones to big ones. We've seen a lot. Yeah, because
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah.
Thanks, Darren.
Nice one.
Good times as always. Thank you for coming to Get the Fork Out. And yeah, talk to you soon, homie.
All right, mate. Thank you very much. Take care.
Bye, man. You're welcome. See you, man.
All right. That was Darren Goodwin. Hope you guys enjoyed that chat. Like I said, great friend of mine. The beers continued after the podcast ended, and some of those stories that came out. We're talking like a 10-boat fleet. It's just such a massive program. But I've been around a long time, and I'm kind of numb to a lot of these types of stories. And his stories just blew my mind. I wish we could have talked about that. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed it. Next guest, next week is going to be Peter Vogel, who's been a real kind of like visionary for interior service in the industry for a long time. Like, he's been doing it at a high level for decades. And we're going to talk about the changes in the industry, expectation, kind of what's been changed from a guest perspective, crew perspective, and what has changed maybe globally in service at the highest level. So I hope you enjoy that. That'll be next week. And thank you for watching Get the Fork Out.